Jared joined the church family I was working with several years ago one fall. He was attending a university nearby, beginning his education as a freshman. And as sometimes happens, we didn't see Jared very much that first year. He didn't live too far from where we were, so Mama's cooking was just about 2 hours away. Our assumption is he was going home on the weekends. But at the beginning of his second year, his grandmother called me and said, "There's more going on, and I wish you would talk to him." And so I caught him at services one Sunday and bribed him with dinner to come visit with Heidi and I, and he agreed. So we had supper that night, and then we sat down and we talked. I really like Jared. He's a good kid. And he was really plain about what was going on. He said, "You know, now that I'm kind of out on my own, to be honest with you, I've just started looking around a little bit. I've been visiting some different kinds of churches." And he said, "In fact, I've really found one I really like. I really like the worship at this place." He said, "There's a lot of young people that go there, so there's lots of people my age." And he said, "The church has a great band, and when they play, everybody kind of stands up and waves their arms in the air and sway back and forth, and people are crying and everything." He said, "It's so much more emotional and so much more spiritual," was the way he described it. He said, "I just really like that." He said, "And then I come back here, and it's not as exciting," he said. "It just feels like we're going through the routine. In fact," he said, "frankly, it's kind of boring in comparison." So we talked about that night. And as the evening was wrapping up, I proposed something to him. I said, "Listen, why don't you come back next week? We'll feed you again. Food works really good with college kids, okay? We'll feed you again, and when we're done, we'll study for an hour. And what we'll do is we'll set aside everything both of us have been taught our whole lives about worship. We were brought up very similarly, religiously. We'll set all that aside. We'll start in Genesis, and we'll go through the Bible looking for worship stories, and we'll just start exploring them and seeing what we can learn." And he liked that idea. And so for about 3 or 4 weeks, he would come and eat, and then we would go through the Bible reading worship stories. This morning, brothers and sisters, I would like to invite you to do that with me. I'll put your mind at ease in advance. It took weeks and weeks for Jared and I to do this. We will not spend that long this morning, okay? But I do want you to walk through the Bible with me. I would suggest, if there is a God who has said something about worship, that ought to be vital to me and you. We should want to know that. And so I want to invite you this morning, let's go all the way back to the beginning, back to the book of Genesis, and start looking for worship stories and see what we can learn. We don't have to go very far. In fact, I'll give you the table of contents right up front. That's where we're going, okay? We don't have to go very far to find a worship story all the way back to Genesis chapter 4. Are you there in your Bible? Genesis 4, after telling us about the birth of Cain and Abel, the very first thing Genesis tells us about Adam and Eve's kids is that they worship. This is verse number 3. "So it came about in the course of time that Cain brought an offering to the Lord of the fruit of the ground. Abel, on his part, also brought of the firstlings of the flock of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and for his offering, but for Cain and for his offering, he had no regard. Isn't it interesting that we first get a worship story very early, and second, that in this first story, something is wrong? Isn't that interesting? So as Jared and I explored the story, we saw four things. I'm going to put these up for you too, and then we'll go back in the story, and I want to know if you could see them as well. So here's what we saw when we went through this story. Number one, we saw that men are worshiping from the very beginning. And I mention that because as we go through the rest of the Bible, that's what we find. We find men worship. And then secondly, as we looked at the story, we saw clearly that God is giving guidance and men aren't following it. Someone says, I'm not sure the text says that. I understand that some of those details are necessarily implied, but I would contend they have to be there. Something is wrong with Cain's worship. Do you see that? He is not doing something right. And so I would suggest that implies that God must have given some kind of guidance to these boys as they brought their offering to the Lord. And whatever that was, Cain didn't follow it. And I think that is the thing that kind of stirs our curiosity when we look at that story. We wonder, well, what did Cain do wrong? And some people say, well, maybe he brought the wrong thing. Or some people wonder, maybe he brought it with the wrong spirit. Or maybe it's just a bigger picture about who he was generally, coming to the Lord with the right kind of character, right kind of attitude. And yeah, how long y'all want to talk about that today? You know where we're going to end up? We can spend a couple hours and we'll end up saying, I don't know. But what I do know is that it wasn't right. Whatever guidelines he was given, he hasn't followed those. In fact, I wonder sometimes if God doesn't intentionally leave out those details that stir our curiosity. Because the important thing, after all, brothers and sisters, is not the detail of how he didn't get this right. The important thing is that he didn't get it right. Whatever God had told them about worship, he wasn't following that in some way. And then notice the fourth thing on the list, that God was displeased. I think demonstrating that we can't just do anything, slap a worship label on it, and say, God will accept that. We can't just do anything. Cain couldn't just do anything. Whatever it was he did here, God was not pleased with it. In fact, what's really odd to me is if you look at the rest of that verse where we left off in verse number 5, when Cain is confronted about his failure, it said he became very angry and his countenance failed. Isn't that interesting? That when he finds out he didn't do it right, rather than being grieved over that and trying to figure out, well, how can I honor you and please you? Instead, he gets mad about it. And that winds up leading to another disaster that continues the story on. But as Jared and I paused at this first story, these were the four things that we saw. I put those up there because as we continue to make our way through the Bible, these four things kept coming up again and again and again. And I want you to see that with me this morning. We kept making our way through Genesis, and what we found is that there are more worship stories. A lot of very quick pictures of worship. For the young people in the crowd, you'll get this. This is sort of like spiritual TikTok videos. Man, can I even say that? That's what it is. It's like a spiritual TikTok video. Just a real quick scene of worship, and then we're moving on to something else. And so, for example, in Genesis chapter 8, if you'll go there in your Bible, Genesis chapter 8 and verse 20, when Noah gets off the ark, the very first thing we're told that he does is he builds an altar. And he offers a sacrifice to the Lord. Now we understand why there were some extra animals that were included when they went on the ark. They are offered as sacrifices here. And then, going ahead to Genesis 12, That famous chapter about the promises to Abraham. When Abraham gets into Canaan, in fact, twice right together in 6, 7, and 8, we're told that he builds an altar and calls on the name of the Lord. So he's worshiping in the land of promise. And then, in fact, it's interesting. In Genesis 22, when God has sent him to offer his son Isaac as a sacrifice, as father and son are walking to the place, Isaac realizes they're missing something. He's looking around at his dad, who's now in triple digits. I mean, he's 100 years old or more. And he says, Dad, we've got the wood. The things we need for the fire are here. Dad, we didn't bring an animal for the sacrifice. Which is interesting because it means Isaac recognized that when men went to worship, there were certain things that were involved in this, certain things you were going to need. And that's when Dad gives that famous line that echoes all the way to the cross, the Lord will provide for himself the lamb, right? And then in Genesis 35, God tells Jacob to go to Bethel and to build an altar. They're to offer sacrifices there. In fact, in that context, it appears to me that the family had been through a dark season and they needed some spiritual renewal. And so God sends them there to worship and to do just that. So here's my question. Do you see a pattern emerging? I mean, you walk through these stories in Genesis where men worship, and isn't it interesting that they did the same kinds of things over and over and over again, from one patriarch to another? Why do you think that is? I don't think it's that there weren't other options, because we have some hints about that. That story in Genesis 35, there were some other worship items among Jacob's family at the time. There were idols among them that they get rid of on that occasion. So there were some wrong ways of doing it, and yet we find them doing these things over and over again to please the Lord. Here's what I'd like to suggest to you, that as these men worship, God had given them guidance. And as they do what God says, he takes pleasure in what they offer to him. The fundamentals there are, brothers and sisters, over and over and over again. And so we come to the book of Exodus. Will you join me there now? Exodus chapter 20. And Israel is in Mount Sinai, where they're receiving the law from God. And what we find is that as God gives his law, many of those laws have to do with how they will worship. In fact, what is interesting is in Exodus 20, as God gives the Ten Commandments, he starts with worship. Verse 1, Exodus 20. I can't get that out of my head. When you hear me say Genesis, just think Exodus. That's where I'm at. Verse 1, then God spoke all these words saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you up out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in the heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands to those who love me and keep my commandments. Question, what is God doing? He's doing what he's always done. He's telling men how to worship him. Some things that needs to include and some things that should not include. In fact, there's some details here. God says, no idols. In fact, we've seen that consistently through the early part of the story, haven't we? No idols. I won't let you make any idols. And if you do that, I will not be pleased with you. He says that too here at the beginning. Well, what begins in Exodus 20, it just goes all the way through, folks. As God begins to give the law, there are all kinds of details about worship. Push later into Exodus. I thought about just standing up here and reading all the chapters devoted to the building of the tabernacle. Wow. How many people could I have put to sleep today with that? I mean, if you know the latter part of Exodus, it is chapter after chapter. I want you to build this tent. This is how big it's supposed to be. Here's the materials you're supposed to use. Here's the stuff that's supposed to go inside. Here's how the stuff inside is to be sanctified and set aside for me. And here's how you make the oil to do that. And here's who can serve there, and on and on and on. And you get to Exodus and you think, wow, we got through the tabernacle. And God says, I'm only getting started. Let me go with the sacrifices. And now we get into Leviticus, and there's all this detail about how the sacrifices are to be offered and the nature of the offering, and when this sin is done, what is to be done. And then there are things there about holy days that are to be observed, which days are to be observed, what's to be remembered, on what date, and what's the nation to do when they observe this particular feast, on and on and on. Question, what is God doing? He's telling men how to worship. Because that's what he's always done. He's always guided us when we do this. The other interesting thing, folks, is that intertwined with all this detail about how we are to worship are examples of Israel not listening. Isn't that amazing? That as God literally is giving the instruction, they're not listening to him. So in the middle of Leviticus chapter 10, the sons of Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, some of you know the story, don't you? What'd they do? They offered strange fire to the Lord, the text specifically says in verse 2, which he did not command them. Oh, I've got so many curiosities about that. I hit Jeff up today and say, tell me what's really going on there. Y'all know what Jeff said? I don't know. We're back to Cain again, aren't we? What is it about the fire there? And I mean, you read some speculation about that. And I think it wasn't just fire. I think there's some attitude things going on there. Talks about drunkenness in that context. I'm not sure exactly what all went wrong. I know that Nadab and Abihu got it wrong. And in talking about that, the Lord specifically says, they didn't follow my instructions. And then jump ahead a little bit. Go with your Bible to Exodus 32. Because as Israel is camped at Mount Sinai, and Moses is up on the mountain for a while, do you remember this story? The people think, well, God must have killed him. And we need a new way of connecting with God. And so they make an idol. Are y'all stunned like that, like I am? I mean, that was like the first thing God said. It was about worship, and he said, I don't want you to make idols. And so Moses is God, and they say, we should make an idol. And so they build the golden calf. Now, I've got some questions about this calf. Where'd that idea come from? I mean, we're not going to do it God's way, which leaves open the gate to do just about anything they wanted to. Why a golden calf? I am suspicious that this thing that Aaron formed was not unfamiliar to the Israelites. I think it probably looked like some of those idols they had seen in Egypt, which had lots and lots of idols. They just borrowed something they had seen in Egypt. And may I just suggest, I don't want to be unkind to these folks, but is that not the dumbest thing you have ever heard of? I mean, why would you do that? One of the points of the 10 plagues was for God to say to Israel and to Egypt, Egypt's gods are no gods at all. And boy, was that dramatically demonstrated, right? And so now they're off at Mount Sinai, and Moses is God, and they think, we should do it like the Egyptians do. Why would they do that? Because men have always had the propensity to look around at what other people are doing for worship and imitating that. Remember back in Genesis, even Jacob's family had some had some idols tucked in the luggage, right? Where did those come from? They were looking about. I think that made a powerful impression on Jared when we got to that part of the story. Because I think one of the things he realized was, I've been looking around. I've been looking around at what others are doing, and I haven't been looking at what God said to do. I haven't been looking at the book. I think it demonstrates the importance of all these instructions about worship. Understand, brothers and sisters, that Israel's ideas about worship had been corrupted while they were down in Egypt. And so it wasn't enough just to bring them out and bring them to Mount Sinai and God say, worship me, don't worship the other gods. They had to be told how to do that. That's why we have all of these instructions. One other thing I want you to notice before we move on in Exodus 32. Are you still there? Exodus 32, look down at verse 5. I want you to notice that the people appear to be pretty excited about what they're doing. When Aaron sees that in verse 5, he announces, tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord. So the next day, they rose early and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to play. I think they were having a good time. I think they were really excited about this new thing that they were doing. But if you look down to verse number 7, God is not. He is terribly displeased with all that. One of the lessons Jared and I took away from this is the fact that passion and excitement is not a substitute for obedience. Can I say that again? Will y'all hear me on that? Passion and excitement about what you're doing is not a substitute for obedience. And I think that really registered in Jared's mind. Okay, I'm going to jump now. I'm going to make a huge leap. We're in Exodus, right? We're going all the way to the end. Malachi 1. Will you go there in your Bible? Someone says, I think there are probably more worship stories in there. There are. How long y'all want to stay? I mean, we could just do a quarter of classes all day today, right? Lots of worship stories. But I think if you'll look at them, what you'll find is these four things, these fundamentals we saw with Cain, they're at work in all of them. That's true here in Malachi chapter 1. God sends Malachi to his people because he is not happy with them. In fact, in verse 1, he accuses them, particularly the priest, of despising his name. Why is he so upset with the priest? Two reasons. Number one, they were allowing the people to ignore God's instructions about worship. Specifically, they were bringing their animals for sacrifice, and they were bringing lame and sick animals. What was wrong with that? I mean, you're going to kill it anyway. No, why not bring the one that was sick? Because in Leviticus, God had said, when you come to sacrifice, you bring an animal that does not have any blemish. And there's some things about that make sense, right? And so the priests were letting the people violate that law. But it was worse than that. Because if you go down to verse number 13, the other thing they were doing is treating their whole part in this worship service, they were treating it like it was a big hassle. That it was inconvenient for them to have to be doing this. So two problems in Malachi chapter 1. There is a problem with the offerings. The law is being violated. But there's a problem with the spirit of their priests. They were not having the right attitude about what they were supposed to be doing for the Lord. And I love God's response to that in verse 10. He said, I wish someone had the guts to lock up this place and not even let you people in. You hear what he was saying? I would rather you do nothing at all than bring me this. He was insulted by their worship. And so as we make our way through the Old Testament, the fundamentals are there. We encounter them again and again and again. Men worship. God guides them and tells them how to do that. Men have a propensity to resist what God says and go their own way, and when they do, God is not pleased. So when we get to the New Testament, will it be a surprise then to find that the same fundamentals are at work there? In fact, the same need exists. Will you ponder for a minute what groups, two fundamental groups, made up early churches of God's people? Who's in that church? Well, there would have been Jewish converts, right? But they're not the only ones, especially as the gospel got away from Jerusalem into the broader reaches of the world. Churches also were full of Gentile people, pagans. Let me give you a guarantee, folks. You would have never said to those two groups of people, when it comes to worship, hey, just feel whatever, do whatever feels right to you. For a Jew, they would have been looking for a lamb and an altar to kill sheep. For a Gentile, should I even go there, Jeff? Wow, corrupt pagan practices. You would not have wanted to have said to a pagan, when it comes to worship, do whatever you want to do. Do you follow? It wasn't enough to say worship Jehovah. They needed to know how to do that. Literally, what do we do when we gather to worship so that God will be honored? And so what do we find in the New Testament? We find instructions about worship, like the Lord's Supper, which we just observed, right? We do that in part because in Matthew 26 and verse 26, on the night before he died, Jesus said, here is the way I want you to remember me. And isn't it interesting that even though this is a very simple meal, the Lord is detailed about that. These are the emblems that I want you to use, the bread and the juice, and this is what they symbolize. This is why they are important. And so, after the resurrection of Jesus, after his ascension, and that first picture is painted of a group of God's people gathering to worship. This is Acts 2 and verse 42. Guess what we're told they're doing? They're gathering and they're partaking of the Lord's Supper, just as they had been instructed to. And there's some other stuff there too. You can kind of nose around and see some of those things as well. Well, if in the New Testament men are worshiping and God is giving directions, what can we anticipate? Yeah, that they're going to mess it up, right? And if any church of the New Testament was going to mess it up, who would it be? Yeah, the Corinthians. I know, I'm with you. 1 Corinthians, we read back in March. Do you remember chapter 11? One of the things that Paul calls them out for is the fact that they had corrupted the Lord's Supper. They weren't following the Lord's instructions about that, and God is not pleased, and Paul is inspired to address that. The fundamentals have been there all along. What was true with Cain's story goes all the way through, and it's true of our story today. Men worship, God guides us. Men don't listen. God is not pleased. Jared and I stayed at that, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. And when we were done, we'd come to be of one mind and shared some conclusions that I want to leave you with this morning. 3 specifically. Number 1. We agreed together where we started that worship is about God. And that's where my focus needs to be. Brothers and sisters, when we come together like this, we are together offering up something to God. In the Old Testament, it was an animal on the altar. In the New Testament, it was a sacrifice of praise, for example. I am not saying that there is nothing in this for us. There is. But to get what God had in mind for us, it must come as a byproduct of bringing to Him what He wanted us to bring. We need to be careful because we are living in a religious world, I would contend, that largely has this backwards. And more around us, what we see is worship focused on the crowd. It's about the crowd being entertained. In fact, sometimes we get caught up in that trap. Listen to us talk on the way home and say things like, I didn't like the song worship at all today. I did, John. That's not a shot. I didn't like the song worship at all today. We didn't sing any of my favorite songs. I'm sorry. I didn't know we were doing that for you today. I thought we were doing it for him. You see the trap we can fall into? And so one of the things Jared and I came away with was this commitment is that as we think about our worship, our hearts need to be set on the Lord. And to see ourselves as participants bringing something to God, not as an audience being entertained. I think that's so critical. Then number two, if that's what we're after, we need to hear from God. Because he has always guided his people in their worship. And so as we ponder our own worship and what we're going to do, number one, let's remember that what we do matters. This is not a free-for-all, folks. It never has been. God has often been displeased, even insulted by what men have brought to him. And I got to tell you, folks, we just need to be people deeply concerned about that. I do not want God to be offended by what I bring to him today. How about you? And you can't read Malachi 1 without recognizing that that danger is real. Now, to tag on the end of that, we're not going to figure out what God wants by looking around us. See, that was Israel's mistake at Mount Sinai. When they decided to go their own way, they're looking back at Egypt. They're looking at what the nations around them are doing. And listen, we're making that mistake too. Too many disciples look around at what other religious groups are doing and are thinking to themselves, maybe that's what we need to do. Folks, if the goal is to honor God, there's only one place to look. You're holding it. It's in his book. Now, here's the thing. If I'm not going to take my cue on what's going on around me, and I'm just going to look at God's book, and if the world around us is focused on entertaining the crowd and not focused on bringing something to God, then we need to anticipate that this is going to look different. That we are not going to be like the nation. That our worship won't be like the church up the street. We're not even working with the same rule book, folks. We need to expect that this won't be like it is everywhere else. Our concern really is not with what others are doing. Our concern is with him and that he will be pleased. And finally, we need to be passionate about our worship. I've emphasized a lot this morning, listening to God and doing what he says. I just think that is critically important. I don't want to leave you with the impression that means worship is just this box-checking exercise where we go through the routine we go through every week and we include all the right elements so we could say, did everything the way I'm supposed to do it. Listen, worship is to be an expression of the heart. I like to think of it as spiritual venting. That we get all filled up with what God has done for us, filled up with gratitude, filled up with love, filled up with thanksgiving, and we get to sing these songs and get in his word together and let all that out and celebrate what he has done. Worship should be from the heart. But may I also say that I think that's going to be expressed in some different ways. I've been a little amused over the last few months at the little social media tempest that has broken out about what we are all supposed to be doing with our hands when we worship. Jeff and I are going to talk a whole lot more about that tonight. We're going to kind of continue the lesson in Text Talk this evening. There's been this whole social media storm about what we're supposed to be doing with our hands during worship. I am just not sure scripturally that's a big deal, folks. But I actually read one guy's comment who said that if I wasn't waving my hands about in the air when I sang, I wasn't really spiritual. And I just think that's wrong, folks. Because I think you can be waving your hands in the air and have an empty heart. Y'all believe that? And I think I can have my hands folded and my head bowed and have a full heart. And oddly enough, that passage in 1 Timothy 2:8 that talks about lifting up holy hands, I think if you study that passage in its context, you'll find out that's what Paul was saying there too. It ain't about where your hands are. It's about where your heart is. So as a heart inclined to the Lord, I want to be sure I do things that honor Him and please Him. And I want to be sure that that flows from a heart that is just filled up with gratitude and thanks for who He is, what He has done for me. You know, in Malachi, God reminds His people, I am a great God. And there is a worship that ought to accompany that. Brothers and sisters, we serve a great God who deserves our careful attention to what He has said and who deserves our passionate worship. Think about all that He has done for us. Think of what we've celebrated in the memorial meal today. How through His Son, He has rescued us from sin. Maybe there's someone in this crowd today. We don't want to close without saying this. Someone in the crowd that needs that rescue. It needs God to do something great for you today. Washing you clean from your sin. Making you His child. We don't want to leave without appealing to you. If that is your need, to make the choice. To be, here we go, Rick, to be holy as Rick has been leading us this morning. He is eager to do that. If you need to make things right between you and your God, we want to help you. You let us know by coming on down and taking a seat on this front bench. While we stand,